Welcome to VI Talk, sharing ideas, information and support.
As part of our eye condition series, I'd like to introduce Ryan Compton. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, how are you doing? You all right?
I'm all right, thank you. So you are here to talk about glaucoma, aren't you, and your experience of it?
Right, for sure. Yeah. It all started really for me when I was about the age of six. It kind of crept up on me. I was tested for glaucoma at the age of three, and I had 20/20 vision at that time. And by the time I'd got to six, it took the vision of my left eye and a big proportion of the vision in the right eye there. And I think the difficulty with detecting it, well, it was kind of genetics, and it was through the family tree that I'd had it. They tested me early. They weren't as good back then at trying to have you in for annual checks. So it had been allowed to kind of creep up on me really slow.
So do you have any sight at all now, Ryan?
It's mainly like light and dark perception, a few shapes that I can see in outlines. I'm trying to think back to, yeah, I discovered it because I'd stayed at my grandma's house, and I'd come out of the house and I'd covered my right eye to see that I couldn't see out the left at the time. And so I went to the hospital and they just said, you know, there's nothing we can do for the left eye, but for the right eye, we need to try and bring the pressure down. But the pain in Ryan's other eye will be so severe that we'll need to operate. So that day I had like a double operation on both eyes, and that was the first of many operations yet to come.
Gosh, so you...
Hi, Ryan, it's Tracy. I just wondered how many...
Hey, Tracy.
Hi there. So how many surgeries have you gone through?
Well, for a long time, I thought it was around the 70 mark. And when I went to the hospital a couple of months ago, he kind of laughed at me and said, Ryan, you're in the hundreds. And I was a bit taken back by it. And I think what it is obviously there are surgeries where they've had to put me to sleep, and there are surgeries where you've had to have a kind of local anaesthetic for each one of those. But there were times when it was really bad, like between 2007 to 2010. And I remember there was one week where in 8 days I had three operations. So it was aggressive back then. It was kind of tricky times.
Yeah, that must have really impacted on your life. How did it affect your schooling and things like that?
That was the main disruption, because I think as a youngster, I didn't like school anyway, and I wasn't in a particularly good school at the time. And I was actually, I used to be able to sit at the front of the class and see the board, but I never used to be a good reader, and I wasn't easy to educate as a child. I was quite kind of hyper. But there was probably other things that were hidden, like the fact that I've got dyslexia. There were other things that were hidden. So for the last year of my education in primary school, I went to a special school for those with a vision impairment in Manchester called Shawgrove at the time. It's no longer there. And I caught on leaps and bounds there. But by the time I got to high school, although I'd had a lot of input and people trying to correct my education, I was still 3 years academically behind. And it was because of the... You know, you'd have 1 week in school, that'd be really good, and then you'd have another couple of weeks out. And the surgeries back then were so aggressive that if you had one, you'd be out for a couple of months, and that's just kind of the way it was because of the recovery. But recovery time now is so much better.
So what happened after you left school then? Did you kind of go on to college to kind of do more education, or what did you do?
Yeah, so the year I left, I was clutching at straws, to be honest with you, because I didn't really know what I wanted to do when I left school. And for me, I was just trying to do anything. So, I mean, I like animals, but I'm not a massive animal lover. So all these ideas came up about me trying to, you know, do animal courses. And I'd kind of applied for free placement. One of them was an academic placement. The other two were more practical, hands-on. And the two placements I'd signed up to kind of basically fell apart at the last minute, and I didn't have any contact from them. So I kind of took a walk down to my local college, and I walked in and I said, you know, do you teach Braille? They said, yeah. And so I said, okay, well, I'll sign up to that. I said, is that the same department that'll teach me maths and English? They were like, yep. So I was like, I'll sign up to that as well. So what about a bit of IT? So I kind of just like made my own little course. And it was really just trying to put back on track the education that had been messed up, because there was a couple of subjects in school that I was pretty good at, and that was drama, food and English. I was okay at those three subjects, but especially from the practical end. But I never did well in the actual exam because that was where I fell apart. And it was during this college run I'm talking about here. This was the first of like nine different attempts of college. In this particular college, something wasn't clicking for me, and my mum had tried to register me as dyslexic when I was young. And they obviously, the tests for dyslexia are very visual, so they thought it's Ryan's eye problem, not that he's got dyslexia. But I knew nothing about this, so when I got to college, I said, "Look, something's not right, you know." And they said, "We can do you a dyslexia test," and it kind of came out, you know, all signs pointing towards that. Hey, Ryan, you've got dyslexia severely, but the one way in which we don't see that you're dyslexic is your oral communication is quite good, which was a true reflection, which is why I prefer to communicate that. And it would have been so much more helpful for people to have looked out for that back then, because that would have helped me get the extra kind of classes and tuition and stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
So you went on to be successful in your education after you left school then?
To be honest, I mean, I think people are ready for education at different points in their life, aren't they? So obviously all the way through kind of schools in and out of college, and I didn't really find a particular groove that I wanted to get into. And I'd done a few, basically the first couple of years of college was just dipping my toe in different things and finding what I liked. And I'd always been interested in doing counselling, but I didn't have the academic kind of qualifications to even get on any type of like the most basic courses. And I wasn't good with IT, so I wasn't going to be able to research it, and I didn't have the money. And a lot of the courses I've been on to be successful in have been courses actually since college that I had to pay to put myself on, which there weren't grants for. But I eventually went down to, and I'm sure you're familiar with it, RNC in Hereford, and I redid my English there. And the first year of my run with RNC was uninterrupted, so I did really well then. So I went down to another local college, the Hereford Tech College, and I did counselling there. I did the first kind of level one and two there. And in that time, I was still at RNC, and I'd done various little bits like Young Enterprise and English and Maths. So I'd got all those up to a decent level. And then I went on to do my A-levels in Health and Social Care and Sociology. And that's, I did well in the subject, but yet again, not the exams, and kind of didn't do so well on that front, just because, yet again, I was being interrupted. I was in my A-levels, I had 40 operations over the time I had those particular A-levels, so those I was not in college most of the time, but I still managed to kind of scrape getting a pass. And then when I left college, I then went on to various courses in like mediation and coaching, and got those to a real good level, and that's what I went into, which was more using the oral communication side of things.
Mm-hmm. So where's that taking you to today? What are you doing with yourself today?
So I'm quite fortunate. I have my own business, which is called the Centre for Resolution. And the main focus of the business is to make sure that people, businesses and organisations and individuals get the support that they want and it suits them. So if an individual needs support, whether it's through mentoring, coaching, advocacy or mediation, then that's what I would provide to that person or to that organisation. So I've done all the various qualifications associated with those fields, and I've done mentoring for many, many years, because when I first left college, I had a different business that was also working with people, but it was more around kind of music therapy. But I'd always done mentoring and coaching on the side. So I'm quite comfortable with those. And it's similar to that of counselling. That is some of what I'm doing is more around the oral communication, and I really thrive off that. And it's nice to be able to give back and work with people and in some cases, you know, help them.
Do you think some of the challenges that you went through as a young person has led you to wanting to give something back to others?
I'd say so. I mean, I get asked that question quite a lot, actually, because, you know, I mean, people always say, you know, if you didn't have the eye problem, Ryan, you know, would you have turned out the same? And I think I would. I might have been going into more. I was always interested in youth work at the time, and I did a lot of that. I mean, throughout my education, I'd always volunteered, you know, I'd volunteered for Henshaw's and various other charities and, you know, youth centres. So I've always been into that, into working with people. I was never really one to just kind of sit about and want to do nothing. Um, But I think for me, when you find something that you're good at, you like to, I think you like to share it. And I feel I'm pretty decent at communicating. And I've often found people that have come to me for advice and guidance and, you know, to help them in some type of way. So I thought you need to skill up in all of these areas. And then when I kind of started doing that, I thought you've got to put this under one roof and it be a business. So for me, yeah, I definitely think it's good to be able to give back, and it's rewarding when you do something that you enjoy. It kind of keeps you away from the boredom, what some people call work. It's not so much just work if you enjoy it.
So you really are proof that, you know, determination, even though, you know, all those operations and all that time in hospital, and as you say, you know, years ago, it really impacted on you a lot more because of the kind of recovery time, but you're proof, if it was needed, that perseverance just pays off, doesn't it? And that determination to just succeed.
Well, thank you. I mean, I appreciate it. I mean, yeah, I think determination is the key. I think, I can't tell any porkies here. I mean, my mother was an instrumental part of my success, because she's always had and my dad, you know, they've always had good work ethics. So you kind of see that, and I can see traits in both of them in myself. I always try and look at, I'm a glass kind of half full type guy. So if I see people around me, what they're doing, they're positive. My dad's always a positive person, sometimes so positive it's to another level. I try and take some of that in with the realism. But then my mum's always been a very determined person. She herself has glaucoma, and I've seen her have operations, and she's always got on with it. And I think the tendency these days is for young people is you can do too much for them, and you've got to be allowed to make mistakes. And I think, you know, I've been fortunate enough to try and learn from mine and then progress from there.
So just going back to the glaucoma, how much information or support were you given? Obviously, you've mentioned that your mum had the eye condition as well, but were you given much support as a younger person going through all those operations and things?
No, absolutely none, to be honest with you. I mean, I know you're probably familiar with eye clinic liaison officers. I mean, I never even knew what one was till over a year ago. It just didn't exist, or it did, and I wasn't told about it. I spent most of my eye treatment was predominantly in Manchester growing up, and then as a result of moving down here, then they referred me to a place in Birmingham where I had a lot more surgery, and they did have signposting opportunities, and I stumbled across a couple of them, but there was no support. Funnily enough, there was no support emotionally for it. So that's something I'm quite passionate about. If someone comes to me, is being able to kind of, you know, signpost them. But I think that you said the emotional strain mentally as well, you're isolated. And as a youngster, I think that did affect me because, you know, going in for one operation and in and out, it affects your friendships, your family. It's an emotional drain on them. You know, it was the whole trying to understand the concepts as well, because I remember going through a tricky phase about 14 minutes having surgery, and I said to my mum, you know, you can't keep taking time off. You're going to lose your job. So from that point forward, I kind of started taking responsibility for my own, you know, eye problems, and I started asking a lot of questions. That's one of the reasons I became a good self-advocate and an advocate for others, because I was learning how to communicate with people and ask the right questions. And you know what it's like, you go into, whether it's talking to one in a medical profession or any profession, we have a tendency to use all these acronyms. And I just would be like, you know, what does that mean? And kind of cut through the rubbish that is the technical jargon. So no, to answer your question, there wasn't a lot of support. But I think I just became better at asking for it.
So what advice would you give to anyone listening to this who may be in the early stages of glaucoma or have children that have been diagnosed as having glaucoma? What advice would you give to them?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a tendency to feel worried, which is absolutely normal. That's fine, especially for parents as well. I think the tendency is that, you know, every parent wants to, from a place of love, they want to protect their daughter or son. They've still got to let that young person breathe for one, and let them live their life and let them make their mistakes, as we all did, and that's how we know what we know. But for the individuals and families, I think they've got to go in there. They've got to be willing to ask questions. Don't feel stupid. You know, that knowledge is only as good as what you know. So if you don't know something, the only way you're going to get to know is by asking. And I think if consultants fob you off, which sometimes they do, you've got to just be honest and say, look, I want regular checkups. I mean, I didn't know this back then. My mum didn't know it. But I, you know, if the day comes when I have my child, I will definitely say, at the very least, I want them to have eye checkups every 6 months to a year, you know, and my eyesight would never have gone as bad had I have known that, because it's, you know, glaucoma is a silent disease and can creep on you and cause a lot of damage quickly. So I think just ask questions, let them answer them, work with the consultants, and, you know, Google's your best friend these days, so you can Google things. There's lots of signposts and opportunities, organizations that are out there to help you. But yet again, I mean, if you don't know about it, we've got to make a conscious effort to try and find out so we can work alongside these people. And it can be frightening, you know, being left out there on your own, but the help is there, it's just trying to find it. So yeah, that's what I'd say.
Yeah, and you raise a very good point there. In general, for everybody, you know, it's important to have those eye health checks and just kind of pick up on those symptoms as early as possible in terms of detecting any silent eye disease as well, like you've mentioned.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, thank you so much, Ryan. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. A really, really interesting story. Hopefully lots of people will gain something from it.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. It was great talking to you all as well. And, you know, if anyone wants to kind of reach out over everything we've talked about, you know, they're more than welcome to. They can catch me at kind of ryan@centreforresolution.co.uk. That's my email address. The website is centreforresolution.com. And, you know, I'm quite an open person, so if they've got any worries about this particular topic, I've had people reach out to me before. I just want a general kind of chat about some of the services I offer. That's more than okay as well. But I think the key is, let's work together and let's have these discussions openly.
Absolutely. That's really good advice. Yeah. Thank you, Ryan. And we'll put your details with the interview.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic.
You can contact us by emailing podcast@vitalk.co.uk, on Facebook by searching for VI Talk, on Twitter @VITalkPodcast, and our website address is www.vitalk.co.uk.